morning. Good morning. Come. Are you joining? Are you joining? So come. Let's everyone sit in so we have enough room. Good morning, everyone. Good morning. Okay, good morning, guys. Come. Slide in. Why don't you move the seat in so I have a little more room right here on the table. Okay. Yeah, Adam, Gabby, come. So, Parsha Shoftim describes some of the organs of government. The king, the Beis Din, the Kohanim. But one of the organs that we've lost the tradition of, and sometimes we underappreciate, is the Navi. And the Navi's job partially is to provide some of that sense of the future, and that's why we don't have to defer to wizards and sorcerers and Onin and Menachesh. He's also meant to provide a supernatural guidance when necessary. Rav Amital was always fond of quoting the Vilna Gaon that a person in the days of a Navi would sit with a Navi, and that Navi would provide a personalized menu of Avodas Hashem, how you should perform. He'd be able to read you in ways that even psychotherapists can't read you. But of course, the threat is of a Navi Sheker. What happens if a Navi Sheker, he can essentially scuttle the whole system. And Parsha Shoftim describes the test for how to skunk out a Navi Sheker. You're not supposed to adhere, you're not supposed to follow a Navi Sheker, but how do you know? He's got information that you don't have access to. So how are you able to discriminate between a Navi Emes and a Navi Sheker? So Moshe voices the concerns which ultimately will haunt the Jewish people. Very often in Sefer Devarim, Moshe doesn't just issue abstract warnings, but he says, V'chisomar bilvavcha, al tomar bilvavcha. He actually voices the types of statements that the Jewish people may ask themselves when they enter Eretz Yisrael. V'chisomar bilvavcha, echan edas hadavar asher lo dibro Hashem. How do I know the difference between a Navi Emet and a Navi Sheker? I'm not a Navi. So if a Navi issues a statement, maybe I have to adhere to it at the threat of following a Navi Sheker. So the Torah provides a test. If a Navi prophesizes, but it isn't fulfilled, Asher yidaber ha-Navi b'shem Hashem v'lo yiyah, that Navi is proven to be fraudulent and a forgery, and you shouldn't follow that Navi's instructions. Okay, so the Torah provides a fairly straightforward metric or litmus for a Navi. Any Navi whose prophecy hasn't been fulfilled is a Navi Sheker. Rashi, for some reason, quotes a case in Yirmiyah about a Navi Sheker facing off with a Navi Emes. The second Beis HaMikdash collapsed in part because the office of the Nevuah was abused. Much of the abuse had to do with moral hypocrisy. But the Nevi'im spoke one message, but somehow, actually the Nevi'im weren't hypocrites, the Kohanim and others were hypocrites, but there was a lot of seething anger towards Nevi'im. As you know, Zechariah HaNavi was murdered in the Beis HaMikdash, and that's one of the kinos which we recite. On the Nevi'im were incarcerated. Yirmiyah was ultimately brought to trial. But there was a famous, celebrated face-off between Yirmiyah and a Navi Sheker called, anyone know? Hananiah ben Azar. Very good. This took place at a very delicate time of history. It took place right in between the first exile and the second exile. The first exile was during the reign of Yehoyachin, or Yechaniah, and that's the exile that Mordechai was exiled with, Asher Haglam Yerushalayim Im Yechaniah Melech Yudah. Then there was a break of about 18 years, in which there were two puppet kings, at least two, Yehoyakim and Sidkio. And at that point, many of the Kalim of the Beit HaMikdash had already been ransacked to Bavel in the first wave, but some of the Kalim HaMikdash were still in the Beit HaMikdash. And the Jews weren't sure. Is this just a temporary punishment, like most of Sefer Shoftim and Sefer Melachim, where Hashem will redeem us, but ultimately our enemies will be defeated? Or this galus will turn into a long-standing galus because the person who ransacked the Beis HaMikdash, Nebuchadnezzar, will become the supreme dominant leader of the entire Middle Eastern region. So Hananiah ben Azar prophesizes, don't worry, nothing to worry about here. All the Kalim that are in Bavel will now be returned, and you don't have to worry about any future intensification of this galus. Whereas Yirmiyah had previously prophesied that no, the rest of the clan Mikdash will descend to Bavel, or will be exiled to Bavel, and this is a time for Tshuva. Rashi quotes that case.
Why is Rashi quoting this case? What is he hoping to add to the Torah's version in Parsha Shoftim that this case in Yirmiyah in Perek Chav Zayin, Perek Chav Ches displays? There really are at least two things that are happening that are important to complement Sefer Shoftim. Parsha Shoftim. Parsha Shoftim describes any prophecy which doesn't come true to be indicative of a false prophet. It's not exactly true. And Yirmiyah adds that. The Yerushalmi and the Medrash quotes a conversation between Yirmiyah and Hananiah ben Mazar. Hananiah ben Mazar says, give me a sign that we'll know whether you're a Navi Emes or a Navi Sheker. And Yirmiyah says, I can't, because my Nevuah is about Peronis. My Nevuah is about suffering. That type of Nevuah may not come true, because the purpose of a Navi who comes to speak Peronis is that his Nevuah shouldn't come true. The purpose of a Navi is to rebuke the Jewish people and to hope that they'll change their behavior and that the prophecy won't be fulfilled and that the doom and the destruction won't occur. So if my Nevuah doesn't ring true, it shows that I'm a Navi Emes. It shows that I'm fulfilling my role. So I can't give you a sign for you to gauge whether I'm a Navi Emes or not. But you, he tells to Hananiah ben Azar, you're speaking a prophecy of rebirth and of bracha and of welfare. If that doesn't come true, then you will be proven as a Navi Sheker. And the Rambam, in Huchos Yisodei HaTorah, quotes this episode between Yirmiyah and Hananiah ben Azor, because it's a partial test in Parsha Shoftim. Parsha Shoftim makes it sound as if any Nevuah which doesn't occur proves that the author was Sheker. Whereas the Rambam says, no, we have to look in Yirmiyah Perech HaZayin, Perech HaFches, for an update and a more precise definition. When a Navi describes a potential klala and it doesn't occur, that doesn't mean he's a Navi Sheker. If he describes a potential bracha, and then in the end, Yirmiyah says, I've got a sign for you. You're going to die at the end of this year. And that's the sign of Peronis, and that ultimately comes true. The second issue, which is the possibly the undercurrent, is that Yirmiyah's chiding Hananiah says, that's not what a Navi's job is. A Navi's job is not to give a nevuah of bracha. The Navi's job is, let me see if I can find the pasuk. Yirmiyah says in Perech Chav Ches, Pasuk Ches, Hanaviyim asher hayu lefanai lefanecha min ha'olam, this great legacy and tradition of Neviim, vayinavu el aretzos rabos yamam lachos gedolos lemilchama ulira'a uledaver. The job of a Navi is not to celebrate when good things will happen or to reinforce people's mediocre behavior, but to challenge people by the prospect and the specter of Peronis, of Ra, and Dever, and Milchama, and then to challenge the people to higher ground to hopefully avoid that Nevuah's fruition. So by you coming and assuring the people, don't worry, your religious behavior is underwhelming and inferior, but don't worry, Hashem will redeem you and return the Kalim from Bavel back to Eretz Yisrael, you're basically a coward. You're not performing your job as a Navi. Nevi'im have to have great courage. Yirmiyah was afraid. His whole life, Hashem, in the beginning of Yirmiyah, had to embolden Yirmiyah. Don't worry. I knew you before you were born. This was your job in life, even though you'll meet with a lot of hostility. So there are two important points that emerge from Yirmiyah, Perek Chav Zayin, Perek Chav Ches, and this is the reason Rashi cites this example. First of all, it's the most celebrated face-off between Nevi Emes and Nevi Sheker in the first base of Megiddo. There were several, but this is the most famous. Most of you probably know Elio and the Nevi Habal and Har HaKarmel, but there are others in Sefer Melachim in particular. Number two, because it updates the screening for a Navi Emes, Navi Sheker. It's not true that if a prophecy isn't fulfilled, it's a Navi Sheker. It depends what type of prophecy. And Yirmiyah's prophecy was about Onesh, and therefore, there's no way to prove whether he's right or wrong. But Hananiah ben Azor's prophecy was about Bracha, and if that didn't come true, and it didn't come true, it shows that he was a Navi Sheker. It turns out he died before they could determine whether it was true or not, based on Yirmiyah's prophecy. And number three, Yirmiyah is challenging Hananiah. The job, the function of a Navi is not to reinforce behavior, but to challenge behavior. That's why in Chazal, Navi was called Divrei Kabbalah. Have you ever heard of the expression, Divrei Kabbalah, Me Divrei Torah, Lo Yalfinan? Rashi in Psachim, we're going to learn Psachim, Emir Tashem, and Adar Aleph, says that a Navi is called Kabbalah because their job is Likbal, to complain. Kuf Vav Beis Lamed is to complain, to challenge. And Navi were never popular, and therefore, Yirmiyah was always frightened and ultimately was arrested and tried for being a Navi. So it's an important Rashi. You don't know why Rashi is all of a sudden quoting the story from Yirmiyah, Perek Chav Zayin Chav Ches. Not only is it the most celebrated instance of a Navi Sheker, but it also adds information that you wouldn't get from Parsha Shoftim. Number two, another interesting Rashi. Torah has an Isser of Lo Tasig Gvol Re'ehu. Now, Chazal darshan from this Pasuk, lo tasig gvul re'eu means you're not allowed to infringe on another person's financial capacity. So if someone has a pizza shop, there are severe questions. Judaism is not an unrestrained capitalist environment. You may not be able to open a pizza shop right next door because you have to respect his earning capacity that you may be compromising by opening competition. And there are real shilohs that occur even in our day about whether you can open and what types of aspects are infringing upon the other person's ability to earn a living. That's called hasagas gevul. You're taking away the earning capacity of another human being. But the literal translation of lo tasig gevul re'acha means you're not allowed to move the fence of your neighbor's land and incorporate that land into your land. Lo tasig gevul re'acha asher gavlu rishonim benachal asecha asher tinchal baretz asher Hashem elokecha nosin lecha l'rishta. So Rashi asks the following question. Rashi says, why, he implies the question, why does the Torah have to prohibit moving my fences, my neighbor's fence in Eretz Yisrael? It's an Isser of Lo Tigzal. I violated Gezela. Why does the Torah have to prohibit moving his fence? I'm already in violation of an Isser. So Rashi says, Be'eretz Yisrael over b'shnei lavin. B'chutz la'aretz ain't over mishum Lo Tigzal. If you live in Teaneck, or you live in West Hempstead, and you move your neighbor's fence, you violate Lo Tigzal. But if you live in Eretz Yisrael, you violate two Isserim, Lo Tigzol and Lo Tasig Gevul. Why is there an extra Isser in Eretz Yisrael? Just throwing around another Isser? The Torah has no superfluity. There's nothing extraneous. Just to keep on another Isser in Eretz Yisrael. Part of it is nascent or latent in the Pasuk. The Isser of Lo Tigzol is a moral crime. You're stealing something which isn't yours. It could be items and it could be land. The Isser of Lo Tasig Gevul is not just moral. The Isser of Lo Tasig Gevul in Eretz Yisrael is a faulty understanding of your presence in Eretz Yisrael. This is not your land. This is land that you're a steward for. This is land that you're a custodian for. And stealing and grabbing land is not just greedy and avaricious and disrespectful to the neighbor next to you, but it's myopic of Jewish history. This is land that you live in for 80 years, 90 years, 100 years, and you're part of a past, asher gavlu rishonim, lo tasig gevul re'acha, asher gavlu rishonim benachal asecha. And more importantly, you're holding on to this land and preparing it for future generations. And if you take land which wasn't allocated to you, it's not just a moral crime to the victim of your theft. It's a crime to history. You think that you own this land, and your ownership is not just temporary, as ownership always is in this world, but it's historically driven. It's part of a larger historical framework. Part of the beauty and challenge of living in Eretz Yisrael is to see yourself living as part of some historical continuity. I remember of Lichtenstein and Rav Amital, whenever there were issues, which came up a lot in the 80s and 90s, of peace for land and exchanging Yerushalayim, and now they're on the table again, they said, we can make whatever decisions we'd like, but they can't just be practical and military. They also have to be with a sense of history, because we're occupying this land on behalf of people who came before us and on behalf of people we'll never meet who will live after us. Now, that may not necessarily be the overwhelming factor, but it has to be taken into account, certainly with areas such as Yerushalayim, which Jews have been davening for 2,000 years. So let's say in theory, I'm not describing what my position is or what their position was, but let's say in theory we could be assured of a durable peace if we just relinquish Yerushalayim. Should those decisions be purely practical and pragmatic? Well, here we can save lives and therefore we should relinquish Yerushalayim. Or should we realize this is a city that people have davened towards for thousands of years, that one day will be the epicenter of our people, and maybe we have responsibilities that are historical, not just contemporaneous and practical in the moment. Again, these are much more complicated questions. They can't be generalized in a 10-minute share. But Lo Tasig captures the fact that there's a second lav. And those lavim, those isurim, are very, very different. The lav of Lo Tigzol is a moral crime to the victim. The lav of Lo Tasig Gevul Re'acha, because of the lashon of the pasuk, you're meant to understand that your presence in Eretz Yisrael is Asher Gavlu Rishonim Benachal Asecha, Asher Tinchal Ba'aretz, Asher Hashem Elokecha, Nosein Lecha Lerishta. It isn't like owning land in Chutz La'aretz, and that's part of the joy. To be able to build a house in Eretz Yisrael, to live in Eretz Yisrael, you feel like you're doing more than just establishing a home. You're building history. I hope that my house that I built, I didn't build it personally like Rabbi Friedman, but the house that I supervised and I planned and I built, hopefully that'll have a larger part of returning Jews to Eretz Yisrael. Someone will live in it after me. Mashiach will come. Someone will hopefully be living in that house. So hopefully, by the way, houses in Eretz Yisrael, when you build a house, they're built of stone.
stone houses, as opposed to the wood frame houses that are typically built in Chutz La'aretz, tend to last hundreds of years. Wood frame houses last 50, 60 years. Stone houses, because they're fire immune, they're fire retardant, essentially can last, as you say, you can travel through Yerushalayim, travel through areas and see ancient homes that are still standing. This is even before modern construction methods. Okay, so there are two Isurim. One is Lo Tigzol, one is Lo Tasig Gvul. In Eretz Yisrael, by stealing land, you violate each. They're not redundant. They speak to very, very different conditions. Okay, so two Rashis. I want to discuss a third, but we'll stop here. One Rashi, adding the whole storyline of Yirmiyah, Perachav Zayin, Perachav Ches, primarily because two aspects are introduced. Number one, the Psak Halacha, that you can only test or gauge a Navi who describes Bracha, not a Navi who describes Puranas. Number two, Yirmiyah is reminding Hananiah, and by Hananiah he's reminding the entire people who are probably watching this interaction, saying, the job of a Navi is not to reinforce, the job of a Rebbe is not to reinforce whom you are, partially to give you that validation, but also to challenge you. And it's important in life to appreciate people who challenge your reality, because that allows you to change and to inspect and for moral inventory. It's always easier to ratify people's opinion of themselves because then you're popular. It's harder to challenge, and you should find and appreciate people in life who really are willing to challenge, respectfully, not in an exploitative manner, who are willing to challenge your system and challenge your narrative and make you think about it. That's the role of a Navi, and that's, of course, the role of people that can give you good advice and lead to growth in life. Shabbat Shalom, everyone. Shabbat Shalom. Shir will start at 8:44. 7:59. 8:44. Shabbos, everyone.